This has become one of my favorite things to say. So I am going to say it. It's that time. It is that wonderful time for Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch. Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch. How are you?
Yes, I'm
There you are.
okay.
Okay.
Food is one of my comforts, and so we all need some extra comforting right now, I believe. And so in the supermarket the other day, they had on a serious sale rib end pork loin, boned out. And that's one of my go-to hunks of meat when I need comfort. What I do is I make it into something called arista, which is a pork roast seasoned very heavily with rosemary, pepper, garlic, and of course salt. And it was exactly the right size for what I do also. It was about 2.5 pounds. And I have to say, beef has gotten so expensive that I paid $8 a pound for ground meat the other day, just 85, 15 ground beef. But anyway, the pork has become very attractive, and I've been eating a lot of pork and chicken, but pork, if you want meat. And truly don't like very much center cut pork chops. I really love this rib end pork loin. Anyway, I learned how to do this roast in the early 1970s from my then very, very close friend, Giuliano Bugiali. I'm going to spell that for those of you who need spelling. Giuliano is a pretty common Italian name, Giuliano. And Bugiali is Bugiali. I-A-L-L-I, Giuliano Bugiali. Now, Bugiali was a contemporary of Marcello Hazan. Somehow, Marcello is now called the doyen of Italian cooking, given credit to bringing real Italian food to the American public in her first book, which, by the way, is very, very heavily skewed towards the food of Emilia-Romagna, which is where she's from. And Giuliano, who was born and lived, in fact, his entire life, or at least part of the year, in Florence. Now, they had very different points of view. Giuliano, when I think of this, I think of that, my Big Fat Greek Wedding. Did you ever see that movie, Jill, or any
Yes,
of
yeah.
you? Yeah, the father in that, played by Michael Constantino. Very memorable part for him. He played the father of the bride, and he was Greek. And pretty much everything you could think of, he could attribute to the Greeks. Well, Bujali was like that. Everything you could think of, he wanted to attribute to the Florentines, to the Renaissance, to where he considered Western civilization began. And Western food began, because even dishes, he was the one who promoted the idea that Caterina de' Medici, who was Italian, obviously, a Medici, who married, I think it was Henry II of France, introduced fine cuisine to France. It wasn't the other way around. French didn't introduce it to Italy. The Italians introduced it to France. Anyway, I must say, the Italians always tend, when they get fancy, to be more French than they are Italian. Anyway, Bujali had a very, very successful cooking school in Florence and also in New York. He once had the school down in Soho. Then he gave up the Soho school and consolidated his living arrangements and the school in an apartment down the street from the Metropolitan Museum of Art, 80 something street. I forget which exact 80 whatever street. A beautiful, beautiful thing. Giuliano had exquisite taste and always renovated these places, his home, his cooking school, to look like he was in Italy, in Florence. Later on, he did the Florentine cooking school out of the city. I don't remember exactly where. We were somewhat estranged by then. But anyway, in the early 70s, when I first met Giuliano, it was before he published his first of I would say many cookbooks, and it was called The Fine Art of Italian Cooking. The classic cook, now the edition that I have is the second edition, which is the original book with additions and corrections, let's say, not corrections, but ingredients change. And he points out in the introduction, I had a laugh because I would like to point that out in my Naples at table that since I wrote the book, ingredients have changed so much that I would have to change some of the recipes. For instance, just as an example, not that long ago, when you went to the supermarket to buy canned plum tomatoes, Italian style or Italian tomatoes, they came packed in juice. No, nobody packs in juice anymore. They pack in puree. So if you have a can of tomatoes, you don't need these days to drain it. In fact, it would be very wasteful to drain it because it's perfectly good tomato puree in there. So that's just one example. And, well, here's another one that I know that Wajali points out in his book is when he wrote his book in the early 70s, and it was published in, I think, 1977. But he was writing it obviously for the several years before that. It was very hard to get porcini, and they were insanely expensive. Nowadays, you can, they're still insanely expensive, but they're easy to get. So there are ingredients, pancetta, you couldn't get back then. Extra virgin olive oil is a relatively new concept in the US. The only extra virgin olive oil that I was able to buy in the 1970s was called a Madre Sicilia. It's the label is still around. I have no idea what's in the bottle. I haven't bought it in many years, but it was a very heavy, if I recall, extra virgin olive oil. Now Marcella recommended the same oil that Bujali did because that was all there was back then. Somehow Marcella's name and Marcella's work has lasted longer than Bujali. But when I bought this pork roast the other day, I thought, oh, I've made this for literally 50 years now. However, I haven't looked at the recipe in many, many years. I thought, oh, let me look at the recipe. Well, going back to the original source, to the book, was a lot of fun because there's a lot of things in here. A lot of recipes, ideas even, just have become part of my regular life over the years. And it's not especially, I don't think of them as especially jolly, but they're here in the book too. So the pork roast, let me give you some specifics on this pork roast. By the way, it's almost better cold. I wouldn't say better, but it's very good cold. And so I may, even for just the two of us, I'd make a 3 pound, as much as a 3 pound roast, because it goes for several meals. I mean, you can eat it hot when it's, an hour out of the oven. I would let it stand for an hour. And then you can eat it for a couple of days after that as a cold cut. So for this roast, which was about 2.5 pounds, the only real work you have to do or technique is you have to butterfly this roast. So you want to cut it with a long, sharp knife, pretty much in half, but not all the way through. You want to, like an open book. And then you make the seasoning that goes inside there. The seasoning for that one was a heaping tablespoon of chopped fresh rosemary, a heaping tablespoon. And I mean heaping. A nice rounded tablespoon of cracked black pepper. I did mine in a mortar and pestle. If you have a pepper grinder that grinds very coarse, that's perfectly good. And if you don't want to make it so coarse because you're lazy, that's okay too. But you need a tablespoon. A rounded tablespoon, I would say, of salt, and garlic. Now you need at least a rounded tablespoon of garlic. I measured this all out. And I made it a tablespoon, a tablespoon, a tablespoon, mainly so that it would be very easy to remember. And you mix these all together and then spread out, I would say about 3/4 of it spread out on the opened up pork roast. And then you want to roll up the roast so that what was originally the fat cap side of the roast is still going to be on the outside. So start with the lean end of the roast and roll it up as tight as you can, putting the fat cap on the top. And now, I guess this is a bit of work and requires a little technique, but you want to tie up the roast very tight. I have butcher's twine I keep in that in the kitchen, and I did an easy one the other day, which is to say I just tied it at one end and then wrapped. But sometimes I do a really beautiful one, you know, like a sausage style where you're threading it through. If you know how to do that, do it. And then it goes in. Then it goes into a roasting pan. Actually, I did not use a roasting pan because it fit perfectly into one of my cast iron skillets. So I put it in one of my black cast iron skillets with some oil on the bottom, and then a little drizzle on the top. Rubbed it on, and by the way, and then I took the last quarter of the seasoning and rubbed that on the outside. Some people make little holes and stuff it in. Tired of doing that. So I do the spiral inside and then I rub on the outside. And then it went into a 450 degree oven that I immediately turned down to 325. This was to the high heat originally was to encourage a little crust forming on the fat cap side. In the end, it didn't brown nearly as enough as I wanted it to. So the whole roast, I would say it was about an hour and 20 minutes at 325 after being set up for 450. About that, it should be at one. I take the temperature of everything. So if you take its temperature, it should be about 160 and then let it stand, as I said, for at least a half an hour, if not an hour. And you will get very, very succulent pork. By the way, my piece, and I look for this when I buy the piece of meat, had a nice streak of fat running through it. And so I got really good basting out of this roast, and it was really quite juicy. And it's still very good, by the way. I think this is the third day. We're going to finish it off today. But
I just have to interrupt. I'm listening with interest, but I like fat.
Oh, so, I do too.
So what? So
do not trim. Do not trim. Do not trim.
So that's what
keep the fat. Thing. No, the fat cap. I mean, my piece just had a nice little like quarter inch of fat over the one side of it. And I made sure that that was on the outside so that it would render and get a little brown.
Okay.
But there was also an interior vein of fat that kept the inside quite lubricated. And it really was delicious. And by the way, that's why I buy rib end pork loin, not center cut loin. And also, here's a little thing. I didn't do it this time. This was just a roast for the two of us like this. But for company, you want to do a presentation, get a nice long piece, like 4 pounds, and this is it. You have to have a butcher who's willing to do this. Have him bone out the rack, the ribs. And then after you've made your roast, seasoned it, blah, blah, you put it back on the rack that it came off of, the ribs that it came off of, and you roast the meat on its own ribs. The ribs get a lot of flavor, and everybody gets a rib or two, as well as a nice slice of pure pork. By the way, what I made this with is something else that I learned from Bujali, and I didn't remember that I learned it from him. But the way I cook beans, cannellini beans, cannellini beans, by the way, the Florentines are often called the bean eaters, the Tuscans in general, called bean eaters because they love beans so much. Just like Neapolitans are called leaf eaters because they eat so much broccoli. It should be broccoli rabe is what we call it. Anyway, the bean eaters eat a lot of cannellini. It's the favorite bean in Tuscany. And as a matter of fact, they grow them. I've never seen Tuscan cannellini in the market, but I do see a white cannellini from Umbria. And I think, I know I said this on the air some months back, maybe even more than months. I tested my Goya brand cannellini, which I think is a good American brand. It has a Spanish name, but they're American. And a bag of these expensive $6 a pound cannellini from Umbria, and it was no question that the Umbrian beans were far better than the American grown beans. And so now I splurge for $6. I splurge and I get these beans. And a pound of cannellini makes a lot of beans. I mean, a couple of quarts full of beans with a nice liquid. We've been eating the beans just as they are because they're so delicious. And all I did was I, of course, soaked the beans overnight. I have a clay pot that I like to cook beans in. I don't know if that really adds any depth to the flavor, but maybe it does. You could do this in stainless steel also. Soak the beans overnight. A pound of beans requires at least 6 cups of water. The next morning, you'll see how they absorb the water. They should still be covered with a little water. If they're not, add some more water. I do not throw out the soaking water. I have rinsed the beans and then put them in the soaking water, and overnight. And then they took about I flavor them with a pound of beans, a couple tablespoons of olive oil, a nice big sprig of sage, and a couple of cloves of garlic peeled and cut in half. And I put those in the pot, and I bring it all to a very gentle simmer. And I want it to gently simmer, and I mean gently. You gotta sort of watch the pot and make sure it doesn't boil at any point, or it doesn't stop cooking altogether. And you want it, mine took over an hour, at least an hour and 15, 20 minutes. I want them to be creamy. And fact is, something nobody else will tell you, beans, even though they taste done, as they cool down, they firm up again. So I always these days bring my beans a little further along, like 10 minutes longer than maybe you would take them off because they're already creamy, but I'll do them another 10 or 15 minutes longer. And then of course let them cool in the liquid where they will continue to absorb some liquid. I don't know, but the beans that I made the other day are so sweet, literally sweet. The flavor, even with the garlic. And, oh, by the way, don't add salt until the end. I would say when the beans taste, they're tender enough, but they're not yet creamy, that's a good time to add salt. And it needs at least a teaspoon of salt in there. Don't make it too salty. The liquid should be just salty enough that it'll be pleasant to eat. And as I said, we've been eating it with the liquid, with some little liquid in our bowls, just plain like that. Even cold, they're delicious. Heated up, I think they're even, you could make a meal out of them. What I'm going to do is, as speaking of making a meal out of them, one of the things we do love is a salad of white cannellini with tuna, some minced celery, and either some minced red, very finely minced red onion, or I like shallot. These days I'm into shallots. You could use scallion instead, but one of those onion family things. You could do garlic, I guess, if you like, but I like tuna with onion and celery and the beans. And then, of course, you want to add some more olive oil to that, dress it with a little bit more oil. And also, either lemon juice or red wine vinegar or white wine, any wine vinegar or any vinegar for that matter. Could be cider vinegar. Americans keep cider vinegar. The Brits keep malt vinegar, and the French and Italians have wine vinegar. You make vinegar with the most common beverage there is. In America, it's cider. In UK, it's beer. In France and Italy, it's wine. What do they make? Oh, and of course, in Asia, they make it with rice. So
Right.
anyway, yeah,
Right, right.
and rice wine vinegar. I have to say, they all do taste different, and so I keep all of the above in the house, and decide what to use depending on what else I'm cooking. So anyway, that makes a very good meal. If you want to expand that a little bit. A good thing with a pork roast is sautéed greens. Could be any kind of greens. Could be kale. That would be very Tuscan. I've never met a Tuscan who eats raw kale, though.
No, it's too. I mean, forget about it leaching your thyroid. But kale, collards, those things are not. They are meant to be cooked.
Yeah, I think so
Yeah, I
too.
think so.
Yeah. Anyway, but I do like beans with cooked greens, collards, kale. Actually, what I did the other day was I bought some beets that had beautiful, beautiful beet greens attached. So I made it with beet greens. Beet greens, by the way, taste just like Swiss chard. Swiss chard tastes just like beet greens because, in fact, they were originally the same plant, but the beet greens are grown for the root beets, and the Swiss chard is grown for the leaves. So anyway, I would blanch the green and then just add it to the white beans. You can eat them hot. You can add pasta and beans. I'm sorry, a great thing to eat with, especially now that I have all this nice bean liquid. Just cook up some small macaroni and mix it in with the beans. That's a meal. And then the greens added. I'm getting
Ooh,
hungry talking about this.
I'm getting hungry, but what if you're just not a bean person? What
Eat
would
something
you?
else. I don't know what to say. There are a lot of people who are not being, I mean, what
No, I'm just
remind
thinking
me.
about you, the
I don't
tuna,
know
the
what to say.
shallots, the
I don't know what to say to
what?
that. If you're
Okay.
not a bean person, you're not going to cook beans, right? So you don't need
Yeah,
to
that's
know how
true.
to season them. Yeah, exactly.
No, I was thinking about the tuna and the shallots
Oh,
and the
tuna
garlic.
and well, I mean, but the beans are half the salad, so
I
you can't.
understand. That's why I was
If you leave
asking.
out the beans, it's not the same thing at all. Not at
No
all.
kidding. No
Yeah, all right, so
kidding.
why
That's
would I? That's not a substitute situation. You remind me
okay.
of this woman who wrote to me once. This is a long time ago. There's a recipe in my Southern Italian book, The Southern Italian Table. I think it's actually called Garbage Pail Pasta. It's a dish. It's a famous dish from a restaurant right outside Naples, but it's made by other people these days, and it's called that because it's got a little bit of this and a little bit of everything, including at least three different kinds of nuts, chopped, plus cherry tomatoes, capers, olives. You know, it's like the kitchen sink, from Naples. So this woman writes to me. She says, "Oh, I love this recipe, but my husband is allergic to nuts, so I leave out all the nuts." Well, that's not the same recipe at all anymore. It's all about the nuts. This recipe. So anyway, that's it. If you don't eat beans, first of all, get over it. I mean, beans are like
Yeah.
the healthiest food there is, and they're delicious when they're delicious. And I think if you probably just had a bad experience with beans, which is why you don't like them. And there are so many different beans too.
Yes.
Irene, my housekeeper, was here when I was cooking the white beans, and she was fascinated because she's Mexican. She cooks beans all the time, but pinto beans, and of course she seasons them differently. And she was really surprised at how sweet and creamy and delicious these beans were. And she thought it was the sage that did it. I think it was the whole combination: sage, oil, garlic, and beans that really had their own wonderful sweet flavor. I don't know. We eat a lot of beans in the States. We have baked beans of various kinds. I bet you vegetarian beans. Oh, Campbell's. Is it Campbell's who makes the vegetarian beans?
Heinz.
I think Heinz, thank you. That was invented for the kosher market in the early 20s. Heinz was very active in catering to a new Eastern European kosher market. Hence, Heinz ketchup was the first kosher labeled food, or labeled to be kosher food. It has an OU on the label that was so a secret, you know, so that the non-Jews wouldn't know anything better, but the Jews would get the idea it was kosher. And the same thing with what they call vegetarian beans. They, of course, were pork and beans before that. Anyway,
I
so
like pork and beans.
Bujali, I have to say, I'm dismayed that Bujali doesn't get the credit he should. His book came out the same year as Marcella's. Marcella was also taught Italian, but she was a mean teacher. I mean, I was a friend of Marcella's. I can tell you about her being mean. She was even mean to me, and I was her friend. She wasn't mean, but she was overly frank. In any case, she was not very respectful of her students, and because she had a lame arm, she didn't really do the cooking herself. She had women in the kitchen with her who she took direct gave direction to. Well, Johnny, on the other hand, was totally hands-on, super duper charming. His students loved him. But the book, I have to say, which I reread this morning, and not the whole book, but enough of it, he had a real big chip on his shoulders, which he did in life as well. But so did Marcella, so they were equal in that. Why the fine art of Italian cooking hasn't become a Bible the way Marcella's book, The Classic Cuisine. So yeah, I'm dismayed by that. Marcella, I have to say, her most famous recipe is something that I find rather gross, which is a tomato sauce cooked with an inordinate amount of butter and an onion cut in half. And I don't know, I just have never gotten used to buttery tomato sauce.
I join you in that. So to be continued.
To be
We thank you.
continued. Yeah, make a pork roast. It's very comforting.
Will do. Thank you very much, Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch on Robin Hood Radio.